The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Okay, hello. Hello, thank you very much, Ian. I was asked to introduce myself. I gave already a short summary of who I am, but mostly what brought me to this topic that I'm going to present is that I have been working for over 10 years as one of Debian's keyring maintainers. And that has got me quite involved into trying to understand what happens, how it develops the PGP status in many free software projects that use it as a basis for say membership and identity validation. I live in Mexico City. I started last year doing a PhD. My co-author here, Jorge Luis Ortega, is my advisor. And this is the topic I am preparing for this work. So, first of all, please do not expect this to be all thought out. We are basically just starting, but I wanted to share the problems the OpenPGP Key Server Network ecosystem is having currently, and share some ideas on how we plan to address these issues. So, the network was happy and simple in the beginning, but you can see this is quite far from our reality, right? The internet starting as a very trusting network. Most of the protocols we use still exhibit that they were not meant to all the time be defensive, be thinking about an adversary. Many things are built on trust, and that reality has changed, right? Of course, you are more than familiar with most of the terms I'm showing here. Internet is not a happy and a trustable place anymore, if it ever was. So, many people are happy and think that's enough to be to say we are past those issues. We are happy that cryptography has been widely adopted throughout the network. Most network connections, I think it was 80% of network connections are nowadays encrypted. And if you see the HTTPS, you may trust a bit of what's going on, but what does it really mean to have the network connections encrypted? Or not only network connections, messages stored and all that. Let's think a bit more into this. In Spanish, particularly in Mexico, we have a saying that hay pájaros en el alambre. There are birds on the wire, right? When you have a telephone wire as the one depicted here and there are birds on it, it's like they can listen to your conversations. the network cryptography we use as a layer, as the S in HTTPS, it does prevent against eavesdropping to a certain degree. But let's get to that in a minute. With this, we get, yes, strong cryptography that no nation state resources can break in a reasonable time frame. We do have lots, several algorithms that have been presented to public, studied and approved by groups of scientists, by cryptographers, so we can trust that cryptography to be real. One of the most important things is that existing network protocols didn't have to be reinvented. Email, web, they are layered. There's an encryption layer over which the same connection goes through. It's easy to encrypt the pre-existing communication channels. We also do encrypt, for example, files for local storage. So in case somebody grabs my laptop, they will not get access to my most private files. But this encryption doesn't ensure all of the properties we would like to. For example, it doesn't hide the fact that there's communication occurring between two participants. So people monitoring our communications will still get that A is talking with B, and they can establish many patterns based only on metadata analysis. And what's particularly of interest right now is that people don't expect, don't understand always that an important part of cryptography is the verification of the correct identity. It's ensuring that if I want to talk with A, I am talking to A and not with somebody who pretends to be A or somebody relying messages to A, right? So, well, one of the tools we have had for a very long time, for over 30 years already, is PGP. PGP started as a medium for encrypting email and files stored locally, but has grown very much past what it was originally planned. However, of course, it does show its age. So, what do we use for identity verification? How can we use cryptography to ensure identity? What does it mean to verify an identity? I like pictures like the previous one and this one because we take for granted the fingerprint as a proof of identity, but is my digital fingerprint something like this? No, it's not. Signing something cryptographically goes even way beyond what I could do even with an autonomous, on paper signature. The signature carries my identity, carries a proof of identity, but changes also due to with each byte represented in a document. Now, I want to interact with a specific person. Of course, if I want to interact using cryptography with my closest peers, well, I can get their identity and I can assure that. But this, the internet is too big. Even the people that are following this talk right now, we are part of the same movement. I know many people working on free software throughout the world. I've been part of this community for 20 years, but most of you have never met. What if out of the comments we will have at the end of the session, we want to exchange information privately? How can I trust you are the same person that talked here? Well, I don't trust you because I've never met you, but I have to trust somebody. So maybe I trust a friend who trusts a friend who trusts you, right? We can make a path of identities we are willing to trust. There are two ways of allowing a transitive trust to be presented. One is the centralized trust mechanism. So if this guy wants to ensure that I have the right to enter this building, they will get my government official issued ID And this has several bits that they can check that is very hard or should be very hard to forge. Right? So there's centralized trust because if this person trusts my voting card, which is our like national ID, well, he's trusting a central player. What about distributed trust? Well, we are a group of people and we have a personal knowledge of some of us between each other. So that's closer to the model of distributing trust, distributing over the set of participants of the network. Most of the internet encrypted connections follow this model, the public key cryptography central certification authorities, where we have ultimate routes of trust that are defined by your operating system or by your browser vendor or authors or whatever. And each of those routes of trust validates a set of certification authorities. While I am more interested in distributed mechanisms where the center is made on each of the users of the system. So every user can present certifications for each of the other users of this network following their own policies. What does it mean that I trust your identity? Well, it will be different for each person, right? But out of these trust relations, we will get a global woven web of trust. So we could picture it like this, right? A user can either go to a trust anchor, to an ultimate trust anchor, go to a certification authority, and then to the destination sites. Or they can navigate a web of trust and say that B wants to communicate with K. Well, B will find different trust paths via people they know, and people they don't know directly. But say B will find that A says that B says that K has this key, and that's a transitive trust model, right? Now, this is not very easy to do. This requires a lot of people to know each other. Why? Because we're not talking about a network with, say, a dozen nodes or so. We are talking about large groups of people. Nowadays, the key server network carries around 6 million identities, which is a lot. So having a network well enough connected for B to trust that they will get to K in a reasonable number of hops, it requires many people to trust each other. So I suppose many of you have been to key signing parties such as the one pictured here in Potsdam, right? What do you see here? Here you will see people with tiny slips of paper in their mouths, checking identity cards, verifying this against a huge list of cryptographic unreadable network IDs. But well, we find like-minded people in free software conferences. We verify each other. We check that the papers really look genuine. We really pay attention to details, right? And we certify each other. The network trust increases. However, this kind of key signing parties, I stopped participating in them when they reached more than 300 people. It was unbearable to do because we had so many people. At the beginning, we were very thorough, checking the identity documents from each other. But after checking 100 identity documents, we just go on automatic. We stop paying attention, and that's very dangerous. One guy once made an experiment after a couple of dozens people checked his identity, he slipped in a fake ID. And many people still accepted it until somebody cried that there was something foul there, right? So let's be careful when we think about key signing parties. But well, anyway, we certify many people against many people, and we build webs of trust. Now, how do we get the whole network distributed, right? If we go back a couple of slides here, here you see that I have a graph for the whole network. I can the path from B to K because I have the whole map. Now, if I have 300 people cross-signing from a set of 6 million people, how do I get the whole paths that are being crossed? We need a key distribution infrastructure, right? For TLS, for the centralized model, keys and certificates are sent each time a session is established. That's the reason your browser will check each of the providers' identities and will give you a closed lock or an open lock, or at some point in time gave you a blue bar or a green bar or a white bar. Yeah, everything is done at session establishment time because they are few ultimate sources of truth, of trust. But in a distributed setting, it's much more difficult. So in order to have a central location where all identities can be fetched, key servers were established where everybody can upload their identities and check for who signs which identities. Mm-hmm. Under OpenPGP, we must first get the identity of the counterpart and then create our encrypted message and then send it. Why? Because OpenPGP is meant for a synchronous operation. I prepare my encrypted message here and then send it. I do not have a real-time contact with the other server, right? So these kind of servers were called PKS key servers, and they work more or less as telephone directories for cryptographic keys. Now, I told you I don't like centralization. We are trying to keep possible the having a decentralized operation throughout the system. So how can this be decentralized? Well, this network is not a network of signatures. This is a network of servers. This is a network of servers which exchange the keys that are uploaded to them. And they do that using what's called a gossip protocol or an epidemic protocol. Those servers connect to each other and reconcile large sets of key information. So what we get, this worked for many years. This worked for almost 20 years. Nowadays, it doesn't seem to work that much. Think about this. The set of keys exchanged between the servers is a binary, non-modifiable, distributed, non-authenticated, eventually consistent storage. Many people will say, well, this sounds more or less like what is promised to work on a blockchain. Well, yes, there are some implementations that are blockchain-like. But the basic thing here is that anybody can commit binary data to this large set of data. It is not authenticated, it spreads to many servers, and it's basically impossible to remove anything from there ever again. So maybe, I mean, there have been attacks throughout history, but maybe 6, 8, 10 years ago, we started seeing different attacks on the model. I'm not going to go through all of them again, but I will only detail the main one. That's what we called a poison certificates. What is certificate poisoning? Well, people are usually connected via a not very large number of links. Say, maybe I am just connected to one person who is part of the key server network. I only know one person, and we cross signed our identities. Or many people will be more connected, like this one that's connected to five different people in the keyring. Some people are very, very much connected. Say I'm taking for a snapshot from a Debian key signing party. And well, yeah, this is our Debian project leader who is very well connected. I happen to be very close here with a previous key that I had. Something happened to my hardware, so I'm not that much connected anymore. But well, normal people, even very, very closely connected individuals, may have hundreds of certifications. Maybe 300 people have vouched, have certificated my identity. Now, what would happen if I got an attacker, a system user who doesn't want to abide by the rules and wants to create problems? Well, nothing stops Mallory from creating tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of throwaway identities. Throwaway because those identities are worth nothing. The only value for all those keys is the number of keys. They are garbage keys, and they are not linked to Mallory's identity. It's just I'm illustrating that Mallory created all those keys, but they are not linked to their identity. And Mallory wants to attack a victim called Vicky. So with 100,000 keys, Mallory signs Vicky's key. As it happens, this is entirely possible, and it has happened several times. So Vicky is forced to abandon her key. Why? Because nobody will be able to work with a key that large anymore. Vicky can create a new key, but getting it signed again, getting it back to the trust network will take her effort, will take her time, will take her visiting people, which was very hard during pandemic, right? And it opens a window for ID supplantation or ID theft, where Mallory can do other tricks and trick people into believing that she has a Vicky's key. Now, what happens if Alice wants to communicate with Vicky and doesn't have her key already? Alice will search in the key server network and will find a very, very, very large key that's more or less 1,000 times larger than most keys. That will create a denial of service on her GNUPGE or whatever program she's using for communication, and maybe even will corrupt her own trust database in her system. So certificate poisoning is more or less like this, an overloaded truck. And it's a situation very, very hard to come out from. So, well, why is it so hard? How come we cannot delete those certificates? I haven't explained many of the details here, but the problem is that the way the SQS key server network synchronizes was built to make censorship basically impossible. So if I have put information in the network and it has been mirrored to several servers, it's basically engraved in stone. I cannot remove the information that's already there. And well, adding to this, I have talked about one of the attacks on this protocol. There's another important challenge in the form of the GDPR, the very important and very positive European regulation for privacy. It brings the right to be forgotten. So if I don't want to be associated with a given cryptographic identity anymore, I can ask whoever is disseminating it to stop doing so. I can send out information deletion orders for anything linked to my person. However, in our network, in the PGP network, it is impossible to remove that information. So this has caused many key servers to simply stop providing their services because they cannot answer to GDPR deletion orders. And well, the outlook is bleak. Yeah, this was a network 3 years ago. You can see it was never a very big key server network, but there were many servers. There's strong internal connectivity. And this is the network at the beginning of this month. Right? If you see only one edge, it doesn't mean the information doesn't flow directionally. Having one edge is enough for synchronization. They just show which server connects to which server. And it's not a stable snapshot. I mean, I can take the same snapshot three times during the day, even minutes afterwards, and it may be very different. But you can see the number of nodes has shrunk, and the internal connectivity has also reduced. This is I like this noisy diagram. This shows that at the beginning of this data gathering I've been doing, we have, this is not number of nodes, but it's the number of successful connections. Please bear with me for choosing a wrong representation, but it maps to it. We have around 450 with a lot of variance, stable for a long time. And after the attacks of Poisson certificates started, this sharply dropped. Here we reach a minimum, but it seems we stabilized around 100. Okay, with ups and downs, it seems to go up. And then here, the key server network, the operators of SQS key servers, which have a pool of servers, decided to stop the pool from operating and retired the domain name. And we have a second drop here. And nowadays, this is a situation where we are having, well, more or less 80 stable connections we can establish day to day. So where do I stand with this? We are still far. As I told you, we are starting one month past the start of the third semester of a four-year project. So I still feel we are very much at the start and they don't have much to show. Right now, I'm just trying to communicate the issues of the key server network. There are several projects addressing similar concerns with different different strategies and different priorities. Sequoia is re-implementing most of the PGP toolchain and they have a Hagrid key server, but Hagrid doesn't keep the decentralization part as so important, and they drop part of the. If I'm not mistaken, they do not see the web of trust as such an important part of the model, which we do. HockeyPuck aims to replace SKS, presents something most similar to what we were operating, and many of the SKS key servers have migrated over to HockeyPuck. It's a clean re-implementation, much easier to work with, but it doesn't solve the certificate poisoning yet. Konix is a completely different system, aimed at key transparency, aimed at no provider being able to switch the key they are offering for somebody. And there are many, many other ideas, which are what I would term in academic state, because I have seen very small implementations, but nothing still large scale. The largest one I've seen, I think, that is different to SKS is Sequoia. Based on Hagrid key server, proposal to use a certify a validating key server where I have to identify myself via a mail exchange. So what we are trying to do is to present a solution that keeps a distributed or maybe more formally decentralized model viable without requiring centralizing entities at all. What we want to do is a protocol that prevents certificate poisoning without compromising what we feel to be very important and positive in the web of trust. So the strategy we're following is called first party attested third party certification protocol. This basically means enforcing what's long been a best practice. If I am going to sign your key, it will not be me who uploads that signature to the key server. I will send it back to you by mail, and you will certify that my signature on your key is correct, and you will upload your key with my signature to the key servers. Again, this has been recommended as a best practice, but it has never been mandated or enforced. What about information removal? Well, this is a very, very important issue. But I've been talking about this with my advisor. He says that will make the scope of the project maybe beyond what's achievable for our work. So I will keep like an eye on being able to specify information removal. I think it's very important to cover, but we're not yet contemplating it. The expected outcome for this will be simple. To keep things working, to keep having to allow a decentralized public key server network to keep operating, mitigating the effect that those attacks I explained have had on it, and allowing it to continue with modern expectations of privacy. We also want to keep the Web of Trust decentralized transitive trust model relevant and sustainable for OpenPGP communications. This is mostly because many projects, many free software projects and other natures of projects as well, depend on something like OpenPGP, on something like the Web of Trust for many core decisions and membership situations. So I feel it's very important to work on this and not lose those characteristics of the model. So that's what I have as a presentation. I hope we have time and interest for some questions and answers. Of course, if you want to talk to me at any other time, you can also mail me. So please, if there's something.
And can you hear me? Is my microphone working now? Very good. We do have a question from the channel. Everyone loves your slides, and everyone is very curious about what software you're using to present them today.
Oh, okay. Well, the slides are prepared with a LaTeX Beamer, and I'm using Impressive as a presentation tool. It's written in Python.
I have a question for me, though. So I like the protocol adjustments you're proposing, but what prevents a sock puppet, people creating their own sock puppet universe to verify themselves and then upload stuff?
Of course. Well, this will not prevent sock puppets from existing. You can create as many identities as you want in the view I have, but you will not be able to pollute my key. Because if you send me 10,000 requests for a key certification on my key, I will reject them, and I will not push those certifications back to the server. So you can create as many identities as you want, as you have been able to create for the last 30 years, but they will not be able to harm other people.
Looking through the questions here. So a while back, there was a problem with the 32-bit aliasing of all fingerprints. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this addresses that, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, this was mostly an issue about the interface. OpenBGP uses 160-bit hashes, but for humans to use them, we usually memorized only a little bit of this. So something like this part, yeah. I used to give people, say, this part, those final 32 bits of my key. And I still remember many 32-bit snippets of my previous keys. But what happens? Of course, there will be collisions. So once a computing power advanced enough, it was very easy to set up a GPU farm to create enough certificates to just enough keys to collide with all of them. And once the collisions were made, yes, to certify one another. The answer for this was to abandon 32-bit short UIDs. Nowadays, the usual standard is using what's called long KIDs, that's 64-bit. But 64-bit keys are not memorable. People will never remember them. So their recommendation is to stop using shorter KIDs and just to exchange the full 160-bit hash. Of course, that's not memorable, and that's something that computer can help you. I remember there was Monkey Sign. There was a project that say for key signing parties, they printed like name tags that had a QR with that information, something that's better for the human because you will have a photo of the face of your friend next to the QR, and better for the computer because it will not lead to a badly typed like a typo.
So are you familiar with the, I'm sure you are, the SSH visual key fingerprint that they have? Is that a way that we might be able to get a picture of our fingerprint, so to speak?
It could be. I mean, I haven't thought much about that part of the problem. The thing is, I saw this monkey sign thing maybe 12 years ago in the DevConf we had in New York. And I haven't seen it promoted further, so I haven't discussed with the implementers on their merits and the reason for not pushing it anymore. QR codes are not visually recognizable. The idea was to have together the face of the person and a thing that's opaque to the human, right? If you see, I don't have any here, a QR code, you will not be able to distinguish it by your eyes from another one. But you would have a photo that your computer can get part of the information and a person can get another. I know what you mean is something very different, that I can recognize the shape produced by a given SSH key. And I've seen it also not very much promoted, mainly because, the situation was very different 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when us system administrators, I am a system administrator most of my time, well, we had maybe 3, 4, 5 computers or systems which we cared for. Nowadays, with containerization, I have maybe 100, and I don't have a large set. So I don't remember that much the shape of the SSH keys for each of my machines.
We have a fresh question from Dexco. Is it not better for people to just use WKD or Dane ? That proves at least that you are in possession of a domain and people are forced to send you a signed public key then. And then there's no GDPR issue.
Right. WKD and Dane are interesting. There are ways to distribute key certificates based on the domain name they are from. So one is based on the web, one is based on DNS records. It presents a couple of issues, though. it is tied to the provider of your, say, mail. So if I have an identity, say, gwolf@gwolf.org, that's my main mail, or gwolf@debian.org, yeah, Debian publishes that, and I can publish that on my own domain. What if my main mail were to be gunnar.wolf@gmail.com? Can I make Gmail host my public key at a well-known address? No. So it not only that is tied to a centralized model where each mail server centralizes their users' identities, but also excludes a large group of the population who will never be able to use WKD or Dane.
Okay, I've got a long question here, but it looks like it's a good one. It's from Volodin, the maintainer of keys.openpg.org. As you might know, we don't distribute third-party signatures because of spam issues. We've been thinking about solutions for this, and obviously they all have trade-offs versus the everything goes model. At the moment, GNUPG also filters out third-party signatures when retrieving keys from key servers by default, leaving the ecosystem pretty stuck. I wonder what's your take on a way forward there?
Well, I think that, I mean, again, I haven't implemented. I still have a lot to read, to learn, a lot of walls against which to bang my head. But I think that if signatures are only accepted by key servers when they are attested, when they are verified by the first party, that is by the person whose key is being modified or certified, that will also, I mean, maybe I will get a lot of spam. Maybe many people will try to sign my key, but it will not propagate to others. It will not ever reach the key servers. Only if they are signed by the affected key, they will be accepted.
Okay. And then this would make this the last question, because I think it'll be the time. Would it be possible to fix the scale issue by running many small scale servers? For instance, Debian developers would have their keys on a Debian server, and people on other servers would somehow trust the Debian key server.
That's. I think it's very important to have many small servers, but each of the servers, I mean, I would like to keep the situation where each of the servers has the full network. It is not so large. It's something that's doable. And I don't know if I didn't understand or didn't get some of the question, but the burden that each of the servers carries by each additional key is negligible. So please, if I didn't understand your question, please write to me and we will talk more at length about it.
Okay, well, very good. And unless I misunderstand the time, I think that concludes the talk. It was an excellent talk. Thank you very much. And it was a fascinating one for me. It was one I was really looking forward to.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.